Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, formerly known as Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about ham radio technology, what makes it accessible, and how you can set up your own system.
We'll be speaking with Kelvin Marsh, call sign M0AID, about the technology behind ham radio and some of the reviews he's done of equipment for accessibility. And towards the end, we'll be talking about the Active Elements website he maintains, which contains not only those reviews, but a lot of other useful information for hams with disabilities. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Kelvin Marsh.
Amateur radio is a really, really good hobby for any blind person. It's a good way to meet friends. It's a good scientific-based hobby, and it can be whatever you want it to be.
Now, we got pretty much the same tip from Tim McGee, call sign WB2KAO, who we interviewed for show 1231, about some of the less technical aspects of amateur radio. And he's been an avid blind amateur radio operator for nearly 50 years. So that was very interesting if you want to go back to the archive and hear that.
And of course, we'll have links to Tim's show in our show notes, along with links to all the other links and contact information that you'll hear later in the show. So you can put your pencils down, relax, and listen to what Kelvin has to tell us.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Kelvin Marsh. Can you start by introducing yourself?
Hi, Candy. My name's Kelvin Marsh. I've got a ham call sign, which is M0AID. I'm totally blind. I lost my eyesight when I was 19, and I'm 47 now.
And what was the cause of your blindness?
It's a hereditary illness. So I was fine until 19. I've got this problem that develops on vital areas of the body, like the brain, the eyes, the spine, and it got my eyes when I was 19.
And that was relatively sudden?
It was. I kind of knew it may be coming because my dad had a spine condition and a brain condition when he was quite young. So I thought, you know, maybe this might happen. And I've got to be honest, at 19 is probably a good age to lose your eyesight. If you've got to lose it at any time, because you've been through schooling, you're still very flexible, very adaptable, and changing the course of your life due to blindness, I found to be okay when I was 19.
I used to be able to see somewhat when I was younger also, and now I'm almost totally blind, but at least I feel I have a vision of what the world is like, how things are laid out, and I think it helps quite a bit. But I'm curious, how did you accommodate to the change? I mean, did you learn Braille at that point, mobility, use a cane?
When I first lost my eyesight, I went to a rehabilitation centre. It was run by the RNIB in the UK. And I was there for about 3 months, and they introduced me to Braille. They introduced me to typing. I've got a problem with my right hand, so I do all of my typing left-handed. They introduced me to the long cane. So when I left them, I went back to my employment in the sales office. I got a guide dog through Guide Dogs for the Blind here in the UK. But I always felt as though I needed to do something else. And at that point, I took the decision that I'd leave work and I'd go and retrain as a computer programmer. I looked at all the various options. And I could have done speech therapy or physiotherapy, but I had the aptitude for programming, and I went to the RNC, that's the Royal National College for the Blind, up in Hereford. And when I left there, I was fortunate enough to get a job in local government as an analyst programmer.
I think computers are a great field for the visually impaired. I mean, you have just as good access these days with the screen readers and magnifiers as sighted people would, and so it isn't really much of an impediment. So you also mentioned the RNIB. For our listeners who may not know what that is, can you tell them?
It's basically the National Society for the Blind in the UK. The RNIB stands for the Royal National Institute of Blind People. And they, what do? They produce talking books. They run the library service here. They run the magazine service. So a lot of magazines are recorded. A lot of magazines are on e-text. So you can download the complete text version of many of the popular magazines and newspapers. And they also have a really good shop. They get into developing items like the Pen Friend and all sorts of gadgets that are pretty useful. So I think if you're blind, the first organisation you think of in the UK is the RNIB.
And if you want to contact the Royal National Institute of Blind People, their web address is www.rnib.org.uk, and their phone number is 0303-123-9999. And for the Guide Dogs for the Blind Association that he mentioned, their web address is www.guidedogs.org.uk, and their phone number is 0118-983-5555.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is the technology of amateur radio and how a visually impaired person can use it.
We first heard about you through the website you set up, active-elements.org, for blind ham radio operators. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you got involved in ham radio?
Basically, it's a website for amateurs with disabilities, and I guess much of the access problems that a disabled person going to have are going to relate to blind people. But of course, other disabilities, they have problems as well. And for quite a few years, I've been working with RAIBC. That's a charity in the UK for radio amateurs. And I'd been putting together accessibility evaluations of radios. And basically, RAIBC were in the position that they were loaning a lot of equipment to blind people. And they asked me to have a look at some of the equipment they were loaning. So I had access to lots of radios. We then got involved with manufacturers in the UK. These are manufacturers of amateur radio equipment. And again, I started to be sent some of the latest models that they produce. And it kind of stemmed from there. These accessibility reviews seemed to be really well received by blind radio hams, and it seemed right that we should give these an international airing and actually put them onto an international website.
So you mentioned RAIBC. What does that stand for?
Well, RAIBC is a charity that was founded in 1954, and initially it was called the Radio Amateur Invalid and Bedfast Club. Now, I think bedfast probably stands for people that are infirm and they are literally bedridden. Then the name was changed to the Radio Amateur Invalid and Blind Club, so still RAIBC. And when I was on the trustees of RAIBC just a few years ago, we decided that many younger people with disabilities had negative connotations or negative views of the word invalid. So we dropped the title, Radio Amateur Invalid and Blind Club. We kept the acronym because it's so well known here in the UK. And so the name of the charity is now RAIBC, the charity working for amateurs with disabilities.
I guess these days we learn to be a little bit more politically correct also.
It's a good organisation. I think for any radio amateur, radio ham in the UK, if you need some support, you need training manuals, you need equipment, then you go to the RAIBC.
And that's similar to the Handy Ham organisation in the US?
I would say it's very similar. As part of the work I've been doing with Active Elements, I've had lots of correspondence with Handy Hams, and they seem to do very similar work. And I've just joined the Handy Ham organization, and I was delighted to find that there is no cost if you're what we call a DX operator. Now, DX is basically somebody who is on another continent. DX stands for long distance, if you like. So if you're a DX operator, somebody on another continent away from America, they don't charge you for membership.
How did you get started as an amateur radio operator?
Well, if I rewind to before I was an amateur, before I was a radio ham, if I go back to when I was just thinking, I need a hobby, I want a kind of technical hobby, and I want something that's going to be challenging. And it just so happened that the local radio club met in a bunker, in an underground bunker, on a Friday evening below where I was working. I was working in County Hall. And one of my colleagues said to me, do you realise there's a radio club on a Friday evening? So I went along to this radio club and they made me really welcome. But I've got to say that nobody there knew what I was able to use in terms of equipment, and nobody there knew how I would use it. Everybody had the notion that blind people were radio hams, but nobody really knew just how they did it.
Turns out there are actually quite a few blind ham radio operators, and after we did that previous show last summer, we found out that many of our listeners are ham radio operators.
So what do you look for in terms of accessibility of the equipment you use?
You've got several problems being a blind amateur. I think the first one is that nobody local to you is going to have equipment that you can use. Now, the normal route for a radio amateur is to do your foundation, your basic exams, and then somebody in the local club that you probably go along to, they will say, you know, I've got some spare equipment up in my bedroom. I haven't used it for 5 years. Would you like to borrow it and just give it a try? And normally, that's absolutely great. That's how people get started. But if you're a blind person, you haven't got that luxury. And you're right, buying amateur equipment, it can be really expensive. And there's all sorts of problems around getting secondhand equipment. I've come across so many blind people that have been sold secondhand gear, and it's just not appropriate for a blind person. And of course, they've spent all their money. So it really comes down to information. You need to be able to know what you can use. And most radios these days do have a voice chip, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're usable. Some radios with voice chips, they read you the basics, but, you know, who wants to just do the basics? And that, I feel, is my mission. That's the Active Elements mission, to try and inform people what is really good to use, what is just okay to use, and, you know, maybe what should be avoided.
So can you maybe describe what characterizes the most appropriate equipment?
Some manufacturers have done extremely well. They've really understood the problems, and they've produced voice chips that you can fit into your modern radio that basically do all of the basics. The basics are that you need the frequency read back, you need the mode. So you need to know if you're on upper or lower sideband, FM or AM. And you also ideally need to know what signal strength signals are coming into your receiver at. It's not essential, but if you're working somebody, it's nice to say you're a strength 7. That's just everybody else does it, so why shouldn't we? So those are the three basics, the frequency, the mode, and possibly the signal strength. But the manufacturers that have really understood the problem, they've made their radios talk the output power, the complete menu system will talk, all of the various filtering options, basically everything on the radio that's shown on the LCD display will talk. Some manufacturers have not produced voice chips at all for their radios, and other manufacturers are kind of midway. Now, I actually use myself a radio that only reads the basics, but it's fine because it's a nice big radio and it's covered with buttons and controls on the front of the radio, and I never need to go into the menu system. I had to spend some time learning what all the buttons, all the controls did, but because there's a button and a knob for every single function, I find I can use that just as well as if it spoke every function.
I gather from what you're saying that some of this ham radio equipment is accessible right out of the box.
Exactly right, yeah. And this really is the exciting part, because so many radios that on the face of it look to be totally unusable, actually, they can be used, because all of those buttons are just an audio parameter on the radio. So if you press a button, the audio quality will change very slightly. And all the time, if I'm listening to a very distant signal, the chances are you're dealing with lots of white noise, lots of hissing. You're dealing with stations on adjacent frequencies. You're dealing with pops, crackles. Even the signal itself can be wavering. It can be fading in and out. And so all the time I'm playing with filtering. I'm trying to enhance what I'm listening to and trying to dim down the effects of all the other noises.
So you're actually doing some real-time audio engineering.
All the time. Yeah, and really, that's part of the challenge of amateur radio. It is a very challenging hobby because you're not only dealing with the ionosphere, you're understanding propagation. That changes over the course of a day, but you're dealing with very strong signals that could be very close to where you're listening to a really faint signal. And sometimes as well, you're looking in maybe two directions. My antenna could be pointing to the southwest and hearing them, whereas in fact, the signal could be going right round the globe and they could be coming in stronger behind me. So then I have to turn the beam and check they're not coming in stronger there.
And I guess that all comes down to listening anyway, even if you don't know what all these buttons are or exactly where your antenna is pointing. It's just your ears and judging the quality of the signal.
It is, yeah. It's basically all down to your ears. But in a way, that's the kind of top of the iceberg. There's so much underneath. There is the construction of the antennas, the erection of the antennas. There's the radio equipment itself. There's understanding the propagation, the science behind when signals are enhanced during sunrise and sunset, and all the bits in between.
Getting to the antennas, I gather yours are quite large. Is this something that a visually impaired person can climb up on the roof and set up the antennas, or did you need to get help?
I needed help. What I would say, with amateur radio, basically I use three different types of antennas. I use quite a small antenna. This is, well, we call them white sticks. This is an antenna that's about a meter high, and it can go up on your chimney or up on your mast, and I reckon that would give you a range of about 50 miles. If you go through a repeater, you can send your signal up to a repeater and it will get you over a hill, and maybe you extend the range by, say, another 50 miles. So maybe you've got a radius of, say, 100 miles. Now that, I found, is where you find your local friends. You find people with a similar interest. You get chatting together, and people, other amateurs, other radio hams, they love to help. And that's really where I found my friends. And I've got another antenna, which is a long wire antenna, and that gets me around the UK and around Europe. And I've also got this antenna on top of a mast, and that's what I use for international working. And yeah, I definitely needed help from friends and a builder to put a big block of concrete in the ground. I think there's about a 4 foot square chunk of concrete in the ground, and then my mast is bolted onto that. And we're talking quite big engineering. We're talking quite heavyweight lattice masts with pulleys, and you stand there with a handle, you crank this thing up and down. So, yeah, that's definitely for help, I think.
How big is this thing?
Mine's quite small. It's probably average, say, in the UK for a mast, but mine goes up to about 45 feet high. But in the scheme of things, that's quite small. Many amateurs have them 100 feet or more.
What kind of power levels are we talking about here for these long-distance hops?
Well, there are people who work what we call QRP, that's low power. So there are people who just work on 5 watts. The standard transmitter power for most pieces of equipment is 100 watts. The legal limit in the UK, and what I use, is 400 watts. But I've got to tell you, the legal limit in the US is 1.5 kilowatts, so 1,500.
You don't need a toaster.
You don't.
What kind of training is involved in becoming a ham operator?
The training is quite in-depth. Here in the UK, we have 3 levels, as you have in the States. And you do hear a foundation, an intermediate, and then an advanced license. And, you know, the technical side of things, it is quite detailed when you get up to the advanced level.
So you told us about how ham radio can be a great social outlet, a way of meeting people, and particularly if you have a technical bent, that it can be an exciting hobby. But you also told us in our pre-interview about some competitions that you were involved in. Could you describe some of those more fun aspects?
Absolutely. Amateur radio, it is all about setting yourself personal goals and personal challenges. And for some people, it will be a matter of just switching on, making a few local contacts every day. For some people, it will be working countries around the world. And for other people, it will be taking part in contests and, well, literally trying to get a better score than you did last time. I'm what we call a DXer. So this is DX, long distance, a DXer. And my real joy is to work countries around the world. And your basic award is called DXCC. That's run by the American Radio Amateur Society, the ARRL. That's the Amateur Radio Relay League. And if you can work 100 countries, then you're entitled to apply for the DXCC award.
And how many countries have you contacted?
I'm over 300 now.
Over 300 countries?
Yeah, yeah.
How many are there?
Well, they're what we call entities. So if we say America is one country, but Alaska, although it's one of your states, that's another entity. And Hawaii would be another entity. So there are many more entities than there are countries. And at the moment, there are 340 entities. But the ones that I still need to work, these are pretty remote islands that are not inhabited. And they certainly do not have a radio amateur there. And we kind of get into radio amateur de-expeditions. And this is where you get a group of radio amateurs from any part of the world, maybe a dozen of them, and they collectively will decide to go on holiday to one of these really remote islands. I worked one, I think last year, maybe the year before, and a group of amateurs went to the South Orkney Islands. So they're right down on the Antarctic Circle. They had to hire a boat for about a month to take them there, set up camp. The conditions were really harsh, so they had to erect basically life-saving cabins. They erected a whole array of antennas, and they gave me and sort of armchair radio hams like me the opportunity to work them. And I was able to work a new entity.
That's just amazing. You know, I have this mental picture of all these people showing up on this otherwise uninhabited island, and basically you brought survival equipment, a generator, and a whole lot of high-tech ham radio operating equipment.
Yeah.
So the bare minimum for the people and everything you needed for the equipment.
Yeah, exactly that.
Now, we had actually misunderstood and thought that Kelvin had gone on some of these de-expeditions, but apparently he has not yet been on one, but he has used other people's expeditions for collecting more contacts. Now for this week's high-tech item, where to get more information about being a successful amateur radio operator, largely geared towards people with visual impairments.
So any other advice before we sign off for prospective amateur radio operators who are blind?
Yeah, have a look at the Active Elements website.
And what's that URL?
It is www.active-elements.org.
Can you give a quick overview of what's on the Active Elements website?
Basically, the philosophy behind Active Elements, as well as putting together the reviews for accessible equipment, we also want it to be a signpost for people to get information. And there are links to other websites containing some really useful guides. There's also links to RAIBC in the UK, to Handy Hams in the US. And I think it would be good to get in touch with one of those organisations or for your local organisation, depending where you are. And they will then help you get in touch with the local radio club, because you are going to need help with antennas. There are going to be things that you need sighted assistance for. And local radio clubs are a great place to get that help. People want to help you.
So really, being an amateur radio operator, you're making connections on two different levels. The local club, where you're making the face-to-face interactions and getting advice and assistance, and then you're making the ham connections to people all over the world.
Yeah, exactly that. So the local people, very often, you will actually meet them in person. Not always. There may be somebody in the same town as you who you only ever talk to. But yeah, they will then help you get the international contacts.
And the Active Elements website is very well designed and accessible, so you should check it out, and there's lots of interesting information there.
As usual, we will have all of the links that Kelvin mentioned in the show notes for this show on our website, which is www.eyesonsuccess.net. And there's actually one more that we found out about after talking to him and researching the show, called hamradioandvision.com. And that's an American website that's fairly similar to the activeelements.org website that Kelvin maintains. That's it for show number 1310. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about highlights from last week's CSUN conference. That will be part one of a two-part mini-series featuring highlights from the 28th Annual International Technology and Persons with Disabilities Conference, often called CSUN. And we will speak with several attendees about what was exciting in access technology, including new or upcoming products and research for future ones. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, formerly known as Viewpoints, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at @EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.